putting the individual mandate on trial.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Can the government force Americans to buy health insurance? That's the big question at the Supreme Court today as the justices consider constitutional challenges to President Obama's health care law. Marketplace's health care reporter Gregory Warner is on the case in Washington this morning, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, you're heading over to the Supreme Court pretty soon. What's going to happen today?
Well, today is the big day. Today, the Supreme Court looks at the least popular part of the health care law, which is the individual mandate. This is, of course, the rule that everybody buy insurance if they don't have it already. Government's going to make the case that they need to be able to regulate this market. They need to get healthy people to join that pool because that's how the costs are spread in health insurance. And states are going to say, well, listen, you know, the government can't tell us to buy something, then they could tell us to buy anything.
And I know that one of the arguments that people are making that the individual mandate is constitutional is that healthcare spending makes up such a large portion of our economy. I've seen this number 20% thrown around that it falls into the interstate commerce provision in the Constitution. So tell us about that 20% number.
Sure. The 20% number, and that's projected to what it's going to grow to by 2020 if spending remains unchecked. Look, in 1960, where spending was 5% of the economy, and if you can think about your wages, that's just a small percentage of your wages was going to health care. That was equivalent with other developed nations. This number just grows and grows, and where other countries enact health reform that controls costs, our health care reform efforts from Nixon, from Clinton, fail, and our costs just keep going up.
Marketplace's Gregory Warner in Washington for the big health care battle at the Supreme Court. Thanks, Gregory.
Thanks so much, Jeremy.
Well, not far from the Supreme Court today, a couple of congressional panels will be looking at the military's push into alternative energy. The armed services have set aggressive goals to lower fossil fuel use. But now there's some pushback, as Scott Tong of the Marketplace Sustainability Desk reports.
Everyone is tightening their belts in Washington, including the Pentagon. So can it afford $400 a gallon for alternative jet fuel? That's how Republican Senator John McCain framed it last week. The military puts it differently, says Rob Melnick at Arizona State University, which does sustainability training for the Army. Take Afghanistan, where fuel supply lines are vulnerable. So why not try solar?
If you can bring power to the front line at the source, not from thousands of miles away, that's a considerable savings of both life and money.
Investing in new fuels is like cell phones, he says. The early prototypes are pricey, but they get cheap if the technology can scale.
But for every invention that someone puts some money into for a cell phone, there are thousands of Chapter 7s and 11s.
Melnick thinks the newest technologies, like replacement fuels, are pricey and more politically vulnerable. More competitive energies, like solar, he thinks, are less so. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up more than 2% in Tokyo and less than 1% across Europe right now. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow jumped 160 points to 13,241 after Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke reaffirmed his support for the Fed's easy money policy.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
This week here at Marketplace, we're looking at how new technology is changing the American workforce. We're calling our series Robots Ate My Job. And to illustrate the issue, David Brancaccio of our Economy 4.0 unit is driving across the country without interacting with a single human being, just technology. You can read all about it at marketplace.org. As for the people who are being replaced by that technology, well, they're not too happy about it.
My name is Jackie Gitzmed. I'm a cashier, and I've been with Ralph's for over 35 years.
And my name is Ashley Schwartz, and I've been with Ralph's for close to 6 years.
I've been doing this for over 35 years now, and if I didn't like to be with the people, my customers, I would have chosen something else.
I was raised as a grocery baby. My dad has been with Ralph's for 40, he's going on 43 years, I believe.
And I, too, my father was in the industry for 50 years. So I'm second generation, actually third generation. My grandmother was a cashier.
I actually came from a store, a Ralph store, that didn't have self-checkouts, and now they do.
They call them robots. Each terminal is called a robot.
So when I started working at this store, it was totally new to me.
At first, we're like, aha, this is funny, yeah, sure. And then it got to be, wow, they want to get rid of us.
Oh, yeah, it's been awful. I didn't really think about it because I was getting such good hours for a while. And now I'm getting, you know, at the most 32 hours now.
And there's a lot of theft that goes on with these self-checkouts.
I had a woman come through self-checkout, and I watched her put stuff in the bag that she hadn't scanned, and then when it flagged the weight and I walked over to look, she insisted she scanned them, and it was such a fight, and I was dealing with four other stations. I had no choice. I just had to clear it.
To them, it's worth it. The price of saving labor is worth whatever people take. You know, what happened to people? We need people. We need that contact with people. We really aren't robots.
I could have, you know, when I first started, I could have wanted to stay in this job for, you know, my career. I loved it.
I actually went to college, and this is what I chose because I can change my schedule if I needed to go to school with my daughter. So people do choose retail. Those are not jobs that people choose not to have. And now I cannot go pick up and go somewhere else. And at 51 years old, quite frankly, no one's going to want to hire me.
You know, before this was a good job, it was okay to stay, but now it makes me want to get out of this industry because you don't know what the future holds.
More at marketplace.org on our Robots Ate My Job series. And finally, to something else that's being automated, though I'm not sure it needed to be. A pizza company in Dubai apparently thinks it's too difficult for customers to order a pizza by phone or online. So they've created a refrigerator magnet, and all you have to do is tap the magnet once and the pizza is ordered. Could be dangerous, though, if you get impatient and keep tapping it over and over again if the pizza doesn't come right away. Just looking forward. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.